Grace and peace to you from God who was and is to come. Amen. The Reign of Christ Sunday is a Sunday worth celebrating. We know how to celebrate at times. We celebrate at the end of things, at the end of the church year. We certainly also celebrate at the end of the calendar year in our community life. And one of the ways in which has become traditional for celebrating, not only in our community, but in many communities, is the hearing of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. We will have a chance to hear that this year also from the Honolulu Symphony, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. Worldwide, it has become a theme or a motif of celebration. And we probably know why. But in about, I think it's the third movement, in about a couple of minutes into the third movement, there's a little motif that goes something like this, if I can work it into my head now. Da 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 da. You know, okay, it goes like that over and over and over again. And here you hear it over here in the oboes and then in the clarinets and the strings and a little bit higher. And look, oh, somebody is calling us. It's a call. Harry, time to come and gather. Juliet, time to assemble. And it's like this building up of, come on now, we know what's coming, don't we, in the fourth movement. We know already, we're anticipating. We're anticipating that the celebration, that eruption. And they go, bum, 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 bum. You know, that three notes and so on of the brass coming along, and all of a sudden it's announced that this is something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. And all of a sudden then these voices start singing, Freude, Freude, joy, joy. The question I want to ask today is, what is it that lies at the base of existence? Just a small minor question. What is it that lies at the base of things? And Schiller, in his Ode to Joy, the poem that Ludwig van Beethoven used for this part of his symphony, said it was joy. Joy is the spark of God's. That's part of the text. Look it up, Google it and so on, and read the Ode to Joy. It's the kind of joy that drives the wheels of the Weltenuhr, the world clock. It drives the blossoms that come out of the buds. Joy. Everything is filled with joy. At the very base of things is joy. Everything is seeking joy, satisfaction. It reminds me of one of the books that I suggest recently and so on, it's a book about God, it's entitled She Who Changes, okay? A book about God, She Who Changes. And one of the chapters is entitled, Life is to be Enjoyed. As everything seeks and searches for that sense of satisfaction. It doesn't have to be hedonistic. It doesn't have to be self-serving. But it can be joyful and full of joy that spills out into the world and becomes, this is a revelation of what life is all about. Joy. The second little vignette, I think, that responds to this question about what lies at the base of existence is another musical piece, one that we use for the liturgy. It was the introit for the day. Sometimes we sing it according, this is the feast of victory for our God. It was celebration. For the Lamb who was slain has begun his reign. Now, that is very unusual imagery. But maybe you remember the scene from which it comes. Comes out of this mysterious, spooky, smoky book called Revelation that we try to avoid and step back from every once in a while. But here it is. We use it very frequently within our liturgy because the book of Revelation is full of singing and, 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 and that kind of worship. And in chapters 4 and 5 of Revelation, this scene is set in which God is seated upon the throne, 24 elders surrounding him, other creatures flanking the throne of God. And then the observer, the one who records this kind of revealing, unveiling of things, hears this voice, apparently coming from the angelic ranks. Who is worthy to open the scroll? Well, there is God, seated with a scroll with seven seals. Who is worthy to open this scroll? As if somehow that opens up some of the mystery of life. And then the answer comes back, the root of David, the Lion of Judah is here, ready to open the scroll. This royal, this regal figure, this strong, almost military kind of beast, this lion. And then the observer looks again, and as he looks, it's not a lion at all. He sees standing there this slaughtered lamb. And that's the word that is used. It's really lambkin. I mean, it's a little lamb. Little lamb, little lamb. And he sees this little lamb slaughtered, weak, and vulnerable. And this lamb will open the scroll and open the seals. Now, what a switch of imagery. Remember when this book was likely to have been written, and under what circumstances? Under an occupation time when Rome was an oppressive force in the ancient Near East. And if anybody is going to rebel or resist against this oppressive force, they will probably have to do it secretively or perhaps in code or perhaps in some kind of other language. But here's this strange language now that this slaughtered lamb lies at the very base of existence. This suffering creature who is vulnerable and weak, as if somehow that opens up to the clue of who we are and what we're about, and what divine nature and divine being is about. A suffering love, a suffering non-violent love that has the ability to transform, to change things. And so that's what's sung about. Worthy is the Lamb. Worthy to receive honor and strength and might and glory. Because this suffering Lamb is a part of our very, very inner deepest being. Of the God who suffers along with us in an understanding and empathetic way. The third, final vignette I want to pick up from the themes of the day come from the second lesson that you heard. You may not remember that it comes from the book of Colossians. The book of Colossians is sometimes known as a letter of Paul, but there's questions about whether Paul maybe wrote this book or not, because some of the language in it seems very un-Paul-like, un-Pauline. So there's some speculation that maybe it was not really a letter of Paul, but we have it yet in our canon. And it's very strange language. It's so condensed, especially the last 5 or 6 verses of that reading. For he, Christ, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things were created, whether on heaven or on earth, visible or invisible, whether thrones and dominions, principalities and powers, all things were created through him and for him. Now, that is almost preposterous. I mean, that language, what sense do you make of that? There is nothing about the earthly Jesus. There's nothing about his walking among the towns of Galilee. There's nothing about his healing kind of ministry. It's all this highfalutin image of Christ. And what I think the writer, whether it's Paul or not, is doing is playing. He's having fun with words because he's dissecting one particular word, a word which you probably do not know. A couple of you will know it. A couple of you will know it. Bereshith. Bereshith. One word, a Hebrew word. And Bereshith is the first word in the Bible. In the beginning. We use three words. In the beginning. Bereshith. Well, what are we ready to call that word? So here's this, almost in a rabbinic fashion, this Paul or Pauline scholar. Say, what can I make of that word? B. Preposition. Prepositions, we know, as it flow back and forth in between languages, are very fluid and can mean a number of different things. So the preposition can mean in, or preposition B can mean in, or through, or for. In him, all things were created. Through him, all things were created. For him, all things were created. It's playful. It's celebrating. But he doesn't stop there. Goes on with a reshith, with a substantive, with a noun. And what can a noun mean? Well, you know, a noun can mean a lot of different things. A single word can have several different meanings. Reshith. Ah, the first. The firstborn. Ah, Christ, the head. The head of the church. Ah, Reshith, the sum total of all things, wrapped together with Christ. Ah, the firstborn from the dead. Four different noun meanings to Reshith. It's a game. It's not a game without meaning. He's very serious about it. But it's a delightfulness. It's a delightfulness of celebration. And it's as if he's saying, at the very base of things, there's this creativity. There's this spirit of emerging evolution. This spirit of ongoingness that wants to grow and into enjoyment at the very base of things. I don't know if any of you get a chance to hear Science Friday on NPR on Friday mornings. Ira Flatow is the host of this program. And it's always a dialogue with some scientist. And he's very, very gifted at interviewing these people. This last week he had on Paul Davies, a physicist from the University of Arizona. And Paul Davies has come out with a new book called Cosmic Jackpot. Why the world is the way it is. What's at the base of existence? It's kind of the question of his book. What is it that lies underneath? And this is the strange answer that comes from a physicist. These are practically his words, if I can get them. That life and mind are the very fundamental features of existence. We don't think of that a lot. But he says they are just as fundamental as electronic particles. They're imbued, embedded, ingrained in this stuff of existence that we have, life and mind. Lying at the very base of existence. I don't care whether you call it joy. Schiller did. That's worth calling everything joy and the burst of joy. I don't care whether you call it the power of suffering love that transforms people, communities. I don't care whether you call it the notion of creativity that keeps on emerging in ever new and surprising and imaginative ways. What do we call it? It's worth celebrating. But not just that, but also participating in it. Participating in the songs of joy, in the experiences and the events of transforming love, and in our own imaginative creativity.
May God's blessing be with us in the coming new year. Amen.